You're listening to Modern Marketing, a podcast brought to you by Influicity. At Influicity, we build brand communities that drive revenue. Learn more at Influicity.com. On today's episode, Influicity Director of Client Strategy Ben Alberts speaks with Tanu Graywall, VP of Marketing, Innovation, and E-commerce at Allen USA.
Tanu, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Ben. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
We're looking forward to it as well. Why don't you go ahead and share your first insight?
So my first insight is almost like two parts, right? The first one is, I think the demographics of the United States is increasing at a really vast pace that I think most people are not aware of. I spend my day steeped in insights. So of course I'm hyper aware. And in my current job, I manage a portfolio of brands that is sort of, I would say the bullseye target is multicultural and Hispanic. So again, I look at this data all the time, but I think that's one of my biggest ahas is that, you know, the diverse consumer, specifically the multicultural population in the US, is about 140 million people, and they're growing by 8.3% every 5 years. And the most important thing for marketers to understand is that they drive about 60 to 75% of all expenditure growth. So if you're looking for growth on your brand, you have to be looking at this multicultural population and really understanding what is the makeup of this population, what do they want, how are their needs and desires shaping, you know, the products you make or the marketing that you do. So it's really, really, really important. Just a little bit on that, you know, Hispanics within that multicultural cohort, Hispanics actually make up the highest percentage. So today, Hispanics make up about 19% of the US population, so 63 million people. And in 2026, which is not very far away, Hispanics are actually going to make up almost 30% of the US population. So 119 million people. And what's really, really important, and this is the one that surprises most people, is that these Hispanic consumers in the United States have a purchasing power of $3.2 trillion. I'm going to say it again, $3.2 trillion. Just to put context around it, this is more than the economies, the GDPs of a few countries like UK, India, France, as well as Canada, where you are from, Ben.
I'm curious on that part, the changing demographics, and it seems to be changing at a faster pace, the snowball effect. What was the point in time at your organization where you hit that inflection point like, holy smokes, we need to start to pay more attention to these changing demographics, to this group of consumers that we maybe didn't necessarily put as much emphasis on previously?
Yeah, so for us, it's a little different, Ben, because like I said, we are a company, our national headquarters are actually based in Mexico. I would say our global headquarters are based in Mexico. And in the US, we're a relatively newer business. So when we came in, our brands were actually selling to the Hispanic consumer who was shopping in Hispanic retail. So that's a really small universe. But then I think the aha moment for us was when we started expanding into, you know, Walmarts and Home Depots and Sam's Clubs of the world. When we started looking at data, we realized that the Hispanic consumer wasn't just shopping in Hispanic retailers. They're shopping everywhere. Because when you look at something and you almost 30% of the population, they're going to shop everywhere. So that for us was a slightly different inflection point to understand that. And then geographically, we always thought, you know, it's the smile. We're now seeing Hispanic populations go up north. And you'd be surprised to see some of those areas where the Hispanic population is growing the fastest, right? Not necessarily a bigger base, but the growth where it's going to come from. You would be surprised at some of the cities up north that are looking at that kind of demographic shift.
Winter coat season. I'm curious then, you're a senior marketer and the organization that you work for has always had an emphasis on Hispanics in America. Do you think other marketing leaders at different organizations are paying enough of attention to these changing demographics?
I think some, they're definitely paying attention. I don't know if the enormity of the situation is still understood as much and as widely. You know, I, like I said, I'm steeped in this data, but then I look at some stats and I'm just blown away. Like I read somewhere that 25% of children in the United States today are Hispanic. I mean, these children are, so it means it's a very young population. And they're really going to be forming families, buying homes. In fact, one of the other stats is that the only demographic that's going to see the most growth in home ownership is Hispanics, because it all ties together, right? They're young, they're 25% of the population. They're going to grow up and start buying brands and forming families and buying homes. And I think that's a massive shift that's going to take place.
In a previous conversation that we had, you brought up something that I thought was interesting. It's this concept of being 200% in America, yes. 100% American, but also you're 100%, you know, your origin, your roots. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this has a little bit of a huge professional manifestation for me and definitely personal as well. So from a professional standpoint, you know, when we do our work with Hispanics, we talk to them. One of the biggest things they say, and that's been a shift in the few, I would say in the past like 5 to 10 years, is that they have this inherent need to really maintain the cultural traditions of the countries they came from, right? And as these are now second, third generation, a lot of them are saying, hey, why do I need to make a choice between being American and being something else, right? So that's where the concept of 200% actually came about. It was actually coined by NBC Universal Telemundo. And the concept there is people are saying, again, I'm deeply patriotic. I love the United States. In fact, Hispanics are the most positive about the state of the country, the future of the country. I mean, just if you look at across all ethnicities, you ask a question, what do you think, you know, how positive are you about the future of America? Hispanics tend to be the most positive and patriotic and a lot of pride. But at the same time, there is this dichotomy that says, hey, I'm also Mexican or, you know, Honduran or whatever, and I don't need to give those traditions up to adopt new ones. So that's where this idea of 200%ers came about. And again, that makes a big difference, right? And how you speak to them, the messaging, the language. And then on a personal front, my son is 14 years old and I want him to be 100% American and 100% Indian, right? So that's kind of like the personal and professional piece.
You mentioned it was NBC that first coined. When was this? Because correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is historically, you know, people come to America, Canada, whatever it happens to be, and there really is that push to become 100% American. Mm-hmm. 100% Canadian. That's it. That's all. Fully embrace these cultures. When did this shift take place?
I would say the shift has probably started taking place in the last 5 years or so, where more and more Hispanics are saying, hey, I really want to preserve, like I think 56 to 60% of Hispanics, when we talk to them, they say, I have this inherent need to keep the cultures and traditions. I think social media in general, digital media has sort of made that possible because people can keep in touch with their families and friends from their countries. They can keep their traditions alive. I mean, you know, I don't know about Canada, but in the US, Cinco de Mayo is a huge festival. And it was, I would say, a little bit constructed by, you know, US CPG companies, because it is not the Independence Day of Mexico. There's much more nuance to that. But it's a great opportunity for people to party, and Hispanics have embraced that to some level. But I think there's more and more festivals like Dia de los Muertos, where it really is rooted in their traditions and they're sort of like doing more. And so then now you see it in the collective consciousness of the country, marketing, ads, you know, brands are getting behind it. So that's the big shift.
This podcast is brought to you by Influicity. Since 2015, we've been building brand communities that drive revenue. First, we did it through influencers. Then we added podcasts. Today, we work with world-class brands to build, optimize, and run breakthrough programs that create and capture demand. It's time to stop renting your influence and start owning it. Learn more at Influicity.com.
You mentioned brands are getting behind it. I'm curious to know, what brands have you seen that are ahead of this curve, understanding the changing demographics, and even within that, the way those demographics think about their own identities? Are there brands that are wrapping their arms around this opportunity, or are most of them still missing the mark here?
I think there's a lot of new work that's coming around to this idea. And one of the biggest ones I'll mention is, you know, happens to be a retailer that reaches 90% of Americans, which is Walmart, right? And they are starting to look at this Hispanic consumer. We are one of their closest partners for their media collective, because they understand, right, that Hispanic consumers are growing, are you know, a profitable segment, and they need to be spoken to differently. So in fact, they did a big Hispanic Heritage Month activation with multiple brands online, and we were one of their partners. But that's just one example of someone big like that realizing the importance of that consumer.
You've been at your organization for a little over 8 years now. Congratulations. I'm curious, what is, you know, one to two strategies that you'd like to execute on that you have not yet had the chance to do?
Oh, my God, as a marketer, you know, that's always a long list. But one of the things I think that we have done very well is we're a small brand, you know, challenger brands to big established brands out there. And so we've created a marketing plan that works with our P&L. And one of the things I think marketers sometimes miss the mark on is talking the language of the business. And so we've really said, you know, we started with more, I would say, well, performance or conversion marketing, which was more, call it shopper, call it whatever, but it's kind of at the bottom of the funnel to convert, because that was the most necessary for us as we expanded distribution. Now, what I want to do more is, as we have now grown, you know, we've created space in the P&L for ourselves, and that's what we're doing a little bit more of now, and I want to do more of is brand marketing. So really starting to create brand, not only brand positioning, which we have, but activating it in the marketplace.
What would you do on the brand side if you had unlimited budget and all the creativity and time and space in the world to do it? What would you do on the brand side?
You know, I think what I would create is I would create a campaign which really finds and activates on a deep insight, right? So to be able to create that emotional connect, which then reaps its rewards in longer time, you know, loyalty with the brand and longer time, you know, customer conversion. So that is what I would like to do more of.
The emotional connection, I've heard marketers that I speak to calling it building a brand community.
Yeah. I think that's one aspect of it, right? So getting the word out, and then once somebody knows about you, or maybe sometimes people who are heavy users, building those communities and activating them effectively. So they kind of become advocates. And I've seen that happen in you know, prior brands I've worked on where those communities can really come to life. So yes, that's definitely one big space for us in 2024.
Okay. Anything specific that you're going to execute on? Are you going to launch events, launch your own podcast? What do you think?
You know, a lot of that is still in the works. So I will be sure to give you an update, Ben, as I know more, but that is a big focus for us.
Very cool. Okay. Again, you're a senior marketing leader, and I'm sure along the way you've developed a lot of opinions in the world of marketing. I'm curious, what is perhaps one non-consensus opinion that you have?
You know, I don't know if it's non-consensus, but more and more, and I alluded to it a little bit earlier as well, was this idea that, you know, marketing is a cost center, right? And it's one of my, I would say, pet peeves that just, I think, gets perpetuated more than it's actually true. I do think a lot of marketers are data oriented. It's just connecting that data to the language of your business leaders, right? Your CFO. If your CFO understands and maybe even advocates for you, I think you've hit nirvana. It's easier said than done, but really aligning yourself to what is the business goals, really showing that attribution to revenue and profitability and pricing power. I think those are the keys that sometimes we probably need to dial up a little bit more.
Lots of marketing leaders I speak to are sort of sharing this sentiment as well, aligning with the CFOs. I'm curious, hot buzzword now, AI. Where do you see AI impacting marketers moving forward?
Ooh, lots and lots of possibilities, right? So we're actually going into it, I would say, a little bit carefully, because as we all know, AI has its pros and cons. I think the simplest things, people think AI and it sometimes can be sort of like very intimidating, but AI can be really like simple as activating the AI companion on your Zoom meeting, right? And once you've done that, you can kind of catch up. If you arrived late, you can ask it for a summary, copies, notes, action items. So really just some of those sort of mundane tasks that either no one does or one does, and it's kind of like another to-do to your list. So from that, I think content creation is another one, huge, right? So content creation, content customization. So we're looking at that in social. We're also looking at content visualization. Right. So especially in the world of CPG, product packaging and labeling is, you know, can be sometimes pretty time intensive. And just last week we were in a workshop and we came up with a couple of concepts. We, you know, put it into one of these AI systems and it was, I was amazed. I was actually blown away by the the visualization that came back. So I think huge, huge there. Analytics is another space that we're looking at it. What else? I think, you know, Walmart and other retailers are starting to do more generative AI search. So that is going to be interesting as well.
Last one for you. What is a future prediction that you have for 2024? What's coming for us in the next 12 months?
I think this whole debate about brand and performance is going to keep on heating up. And I think there's a lot of great voices chiming in. And I think there's a lot of realization that performance marketing, again, yes, it's more attributable, there's more data and all of that. But does that really, really help longer term loyalty building? I think there's a lot of voices out there saying, let's keep a balance between the both. Let's not let the pendulum swing one way or the other.
It's so funny, the analogy of the pendulum and this conversation of brand versus performance, or brand in conjunction with performance. Many marketers that I'm speaking mm-hmm. to are also sharing the same sentiment. And if we are going to use the pendulum analogy, a lot of them are predicting a swing in the direction of performance. And I agree with you. I think it takes a strong on both sides of the pendulum there for it to be as effective as possible.
Yeah. It has, both have their own roles to play. And I think if you do one or the other and too much, of course, it depends, right? Like I said, we were more heavy performance marketing at the beginning of a brand building exercise. And then you kind of go to the brand. I've seen some studies out there that sort of lay out and say that's the right balance. But, you know, who's to say every brand reacts differently? But I think that's overall, it's a good direction to keep in mind.
Thank you for your insights, Sanu. Thanks for being on the show.
Of course. Thanks, Ben. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Modern Marketing. This podcast is brought to you by Influicity, empowering marketers to build customer communities that drive revenue. We create massive demand via social, influencer, content, paid media, and of course, podcast. Learn more at Influicity.com.